passage of the act and the establishment of the regional commission, and the point where the Gorge Commission and the Secretary of Agriculture approved the local land use ordinances to be in compliance with the management plan that the Gorge Commission is to develop. So all the aspects here dealing with judicial review, postponement of periodic review, and consistency of local and state actions with the Gorge Act are intended to deal with that period of time. The bill then also requires that at the time the management plan is developed, LCDC would do a report to compare the management plan with the existing overall purposes of the goals and guidelines, and then if it's determined that the management plan achieves those overall objectives, the department and the commission would make a recommendation to the legislature in 1999 to remove the goals from being any longer applicable in the three counties or the lands subject to the Gorge Management Plan. And in effect, that plan, if that goes forward, would take effect and would be the overriding plan for the Gorge that cities and counties and their plans would have to be consistent with.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
Ron, you said 1991.
Excuse me, Representative Parkinson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I may, I think it's important to recognize that, first of all, apropos of the testimony that you received early in the session, there was a general recognition in that testimony that Oregon needed to retain the protections, if you will, of the statewide goals and guidelines and the existing county plans that have been approved by LCDC as being acknowledged by LCDC as being consistent with the statewide goals and guidelines until this legislative body has the opportunity to review the single management plan that the new bi-state commission comes up with and evaluate whether or not it has the same level of protection of values that our land use system has historically provided. Second point that's important to remember is that the federal act envisioned that in the general management areas, not the special management areas that are going to continue to be basically managed or administered by the Forest Service, but in the general management areas, that what would happen is that the bi-state commission would develop the single management plan for the entire area so that we have the kind of uniformity we haven't had before. But then instead of having this bi-state commission carry on the day-to-day responsibility for administering the land use programs within land use regulation within that general management area, the local county jurisdictions on both sides of the river would be able to, under their existing zoning and land use authority, demonstrate to the bi-state commission that their plans, their comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances, were consistent with the single management plan for the whole area, and upon doing that, the counties would have the land use planning regulatory responsibility from then on. So I think it's really important that what we're dealing with is the time from now where the new bi-state commission is just getting underway and we don't have the single management plan until the time when the counties have a chance to, when the management plan is developed and the counties have an opportunity to, if you will, get the delegated authority to carry out that program under the new single management plan. But we have to address these problems because we'll just create untold confusion in the meantime if we don't.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add one point. I think if you can envision it, you know, now we have the state's program and the cities and counties have to be in compliance with it. Hopefully what's envisioned in the future is we will be able to, at the 1991 session, change that so that the scenic area management plan would take the place of the goals and guidelines, and then cities and counties would simply have to comply with that. Some other amendments no doubt will be needed at that time to take LUBA out of the circuit, because then someone who was concerned with a land use decision would probably just go to the Gorge Commission. The plan amendment process that we now have where plan amendments go to LCDC would no longer come to LCDC, they would go to the Gorge Commission. So some other consistency amendments will be required at that time once we see how the whole system's going to work. But for the interim period, this will make the two systems link up in as efficient a manner as we've been able to create.
Jim Anderson.
In the interim, or even after, I guess be mostly in the interim period, we're exempting RS 197 and et cetera and so on. What direction, if any, are we giving to LUBA or the Court of Appeals to settle out some of the issues and not continue the ping-pong system that we've had in some prior years, to only remand the issues that are still up in the air? Do we have any direction in there on that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, if I may, there's no specific direction on that. I guess purely in my personal opinion, I'm not sure that any specific direction on that is going to be necessary. I think that the legislature has spoken to LUBA in a variety of other contexts about the importance of not simply remanding willy-nilly, and certainly the Court of Appeals is very conscious of the legislature's concern on that point as well, and I would imagine they aren't going to treat these cases any differently than they do any of the others. But we had not plan to include any such provision. That would obviously be a matter that the committee and the legislature might want to address.
Hopefully, maybe this discussion will be on the record, and I think unless there's objection, that would be the intent of this group to not have a fast ping-pong game going on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think that as the chairman mentioned, Art DeFault, who's the manager of the scenic area for the Forest Service, is in the audience today, and I had a chance just before the meeting to talk to him a little bit about how the land use reviews are going up there right now, and I was quite astonished to find out just in the short period that the act has been in effect that he understands that they have reviewed something like 250 different actions, and they have been expeditiously reviewing them. We have not been receiving complaints about hold hang-ups in the review. I think the people that are working in the gorge and trying to make this new act work are very conscious of the need to provide certainty to the landowners, and I think that that desire to provide certainty to the landowners is going to definitely affect not only the Forest Service's administration of the area, but also the actions of the Bi-State Commission.
One further.
Yes.
Before we get away from it, have you reviewed Dash 1, Dash 2 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we have reviewed the Dash 1, Dash 2 amendments, and we have reviewed them with the Attorney General's office, and I believe that Ron is prepared to comment on them. As an overall matter, I think from our standpoint, we are not sure that they're necessary. They embody some policy directions that, if this committee and the legislature would feel that they were needed, certainly we would not object. I mean, we're basically neutral on these amendments. It's fair to say we would make the version that we have, Representative Anderson, is dated May 20th, 1987, and it's just 3391-1. I'm not sure I've got dash 2.
Dash
oh,
two,
we've got dash...
That's Representative Barrios.
Yeah, we have reviewed dash 1. The one comment that we would make, if you were to adopt the amendments in dash 1, the Attorney General's office suggested that on page 1 of the Dash 1 amendments at line 9 that the provision, that the sentence that starts on line, the clause that starts on line 8, the property value shall not be, and then limited to market value or reduced. The Attorney General's office recommended that they felt that the words limited to market value or should be deleted, because certainly the way we understood the thrust of this phrase, what you wanted to do was to make it clear that simply because of the existence of the scenic area, that existence of the scenic area designation would not be considered in as a diminution or reduction in the market value, and we felt that the limited to market value or caused some confusion in that direction. So if you were to adopt these, the only suggestion we would make is that that those words be deleted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Roy.
Mine are the dash two amendments, and it's my intention not to propose those. Mr. Eber has been working with me diligently, and I think the dash three amendments take care of all my concerns.
Thank you very much. Maybe we'll get Mr. Eber to work with other members of the committee. <and other bills. laughs>
Mr. Chair, he's a young man. We wouldn't want to deal with
him.
Just general philosophy, I guess, but what you're saying is that after 1991, the possibility would exist that the counties would go in on the Oregon side and do the routine planning and the approvals and all that sort of thing. Would they be under contract with the Gorge Commission? Would you envision, or would they have a choice, or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I don't believe it would be on a contract basis. I think it would be as it is now. They are, just primarily we're talking about the counties, would exercise their delegated planning authority. Instead of being in compliance with the statewide goals and guidelines, they would have to be in compliance with the Scenic Area Management Plan. We would no longer need the goals and guidelines. There are probably other parts of state law in Chapter 215, Chapter 92 regarding subdivisions that will need to stay on the books, and there will be some things they will have to comply with that deal with some of the mechanics and the procedures of planning. But until we see the complete scope of the Scenic Area Management Plan, it's hard to say exactly what would be needed or not needed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I might add that when I was working on the original federal legislation, and I believe it's still the case, there were some changes in the 11th hour in Congress, and I sometimes hesitate to comment on things, but the federal act does not require the counties to assume the implementation responsibility for the single management plan under the Gorge Act. It's voluntary, just as it is with the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. And what the counties do, if they want to, is to submit their zoning, their comprehensive plan and zoning ordinances to the Bi-State Commission for review for consistency, and then they can assume the responsibility for the program. There is, at this time, no specific provision in the federal act that would provide for any financial assistance to the bi-state from the Bi-State Commission to the counties upon the assumption of that responsibility, but it is voluntary. And second, I think it is fair to say that the federal act does provide a general authorization for grants and funding and cooperation with local government in the Gorge, and it might very well be that the Bi-State Commission, depending on the appropriations process and the budgeting process in the legislature, might very well conclude that they were going to provide assistance grants to counties, but that would really be up to the commission in the future and, frankly, up to the Ways and Means Committee of the Oregon Legislature and the Washington Legislature.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
Well, the reason I mentioned that was because, as I remember it, one or two of those counties are quite small, and it looks like it could be a burden on them if their planning staffs have to work with two different bodies and have, I'd assume, at least two slightly different sets of regulations.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, the counties made that case very articulately to the Ways and Means Committee of this legislative session. I'm not privy to the discussion on the Washington side, but I can't imagine that it was very different. Certainly, because of the persuasiveness of their case, your Legislative Ways and Means Committee concluded that some assistance would be necessary, and as a part of the Gorge Commission budget, there is a line item in that budget that indicates that the Ways and Means Committee would like to see part of that money go for assistance to the counties. I would assume that should that continue to be a need, the counties would continue to make that need known to the Ways and Means Committee as a part of the budget review process on the Bi-State Commission budget.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just one quick one.
Go ahead.
Gail, I'm sure it was developed earlier in testimony, but I don't remember, and the other members probably don't either. Who is going to support the Gorge Commission?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, the Gorge Commission is authorized under the federal statute and under the state statute that creates it to employ its own staff. The appropriation, there were parallel budget packages put through the Washington legislature and the Oregon legislature so that they match, and it's a 50-50 split on the funding. And frankly, Mr. Dufault might know the details of this, or Ron probably does better than I. Dan Kennedy was here a little bit earlier, but basically there'd be an executive director, and I know that there's at least one senior planner position, and then I believe there are two clerical staff support positions, but it's a very small staff that has been authorized by the Ways and Means Committees of both of the Washington and the Oregon legislature.
It is funded by the two states.
It's funded by the two states, and my recollection is that we had less than 10 FTE, and there was the director and a senior planner and I think one junior planner and then the clerical staff support. And so it's going to be a rather small office. We are going to be meeting, in fact, I think Governor Gardner's staff counterpart to me, Dave McCraney, and I are going to be meeting with the regional forester and Mr. Dufault next Friday to talk conceptually about some of the relationship from staff support between the Forest Service staff operation, which is considerably larger than is envisioned for the Bi-State Commission, and the Bi-State Commission staff. They will have an independent staff of their own, the Commission will, but we anticipate a very close working relationship with the Forest Service, which is going to be doing a lot of the legwork on the inventory data collection that needs to be done for the plan and so on. I think Mr. Dufault can probably explain that in more detail should you be interested in it, but basically small core commission staff, and we expect a close working relationship with the Forest Service office.
Thank you. Thank you. Ron, will you be available on Wednesday afternoon next week?
Yes, sir.
What I want to do with this is, because we've not had a chance to read it, and we're never anxious to put it out, but I would like the members to have a chance to look at this before we send it out, and we'll put it on the Wednesday agenda for a vote and send it to the floor. But that will give people a chance to look at it if we have any last-minute questions. But I don't think we can do it Monday, can we? We have to have a notice.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would simply encourage members, if they do have any questions or concerns about any of the language that's been developed, if you could call Ron, I'm sure we could work many of those out. I mean, look what he did with Representative Berea, and we could get those worked out before you actually have your next session. If there are any concerns, we'd greatly appreciate that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Adams.
I guess, Ron, you could take a burden just in case we do go with -1. Would you be able to maybe work with council or whatever to make sure that it's compatible with -3 by Wednesday?
I would also ask if anyone else has anything else to say on that. If anybody wants to come forward in a minute, we'll have you. But between now and next Wednesday, if there are other comments or suggestions, they could do that. Is that the testimony for the two of you? We appreciate that very much. I would then ask Mr. Dufault if he would come up and maybe comment on anything he wants to, what's going up in the Gorge, and how you see the process unfolding, and so on. Thank you both very much.
Mr. Chairman and representatives of the committee, my name is Art Dufault, or Dufault. I am the Forest Service Manager representing the Regional Forester in the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area, as directed by the legislation passed in November of last year. And the Forest Service, of course, represents the Secretary of Agriculture that's named in that legislation.
We don't hold it against you.
Thank you. This is an interesting assignment, of course, and I've learned a lot here today from regarding aspects that I was not as familiar with as I would be in the future. We've been busily implementing the Act, of course, and trying to set up shop and get operating. And Ms. Ackerman has relayed some of those things that we're involved with. I might just add to her comments that in the federal legislation, there is direction that the federal agency will provide a lot of technical service to the Bi-State Commission. And we have begun an inventory of those kinds of mechanisms that will serve their needs: aerial photography, electronic communication, computer use, geographic information system that will be able to develop things in common with that Bi-State Commission. So we look forward to providing that service for their use.
Have all the members of the Bi-State Commission been appointed yet?
No, they have not. There is one remaining on the Oregon side. The Multnomah representative has not been named. I understand that's in the mill and should occur within the next 10 days or so. The Washington governor has not yet implemented the naming of the three members from the Washington side that he has, and then the counties will follow suit, I think, very shortly.
So none of the commission have met?
That is correct. The commission has not met yet.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
How would the Forest Service deal with requests or appeals or whatever for buffer zones that are outside of the borders of the Columbia River Gorge?
We haven't studied that in any depth, but my thought would be that as it relates to other legislation that the Forest Service is involved in, namely the wilderness legislation, that the Act would not permit the inclusion of buffer zones in order to protect its boundaries, and that we would not honor those kinds of requests.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, because I know my colleagues on the House have raised this the other day, and I'm not sure if there's anything that, I'm not sure that this kind of thing gets into the situation, but I guess maybe it does. And that is in reference to an area in East Multnomah County, and there obviously must be other places in the gorge area, probably on both sides of the river, where there are areas that are not currently covered by with fire protection. Do you see that situation being different after the we get the Bi-State Commission and everything else moving? Well, can you comment on that problem at all?
We've been queried also on that question, and the only change in fire protection over what folks currently have might result as it relates to the exchange of lands. And those lands that are exchanged then might come under wildland protection of the National Forest System. There is no anticipated structural protection or an increase in structural protection associated with this Act.
Thank you. Other questions? Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're all scheduled to give testimony at this point on this bill. We are a work session, but because we hope to move this out next week and anyone else is in, we want to add at this point to the bill or comment. We'd be happy to hear you. If not, I will close the work session at this time on 391, the Columbia Gorge bill, or our third Columbia Gorge bill, put it that way. And we will open the work session on the House Bill 2556, related to telecommunication services. 2656, I'm sorry. 2656. Wait a minute, then. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good. The famous.
Okay.
I remember this. They might remember this. From away again. I remember.
You amended this super twice.
You remember this?
You made a amendment. See if we get some of that amendment back in this.
Well, Ryan,
I'm sure you'll have some new members of the audience as well once as the word this, gets spread around outside.
We had that way back.
Way back.
I still got
it. Wait, I don't believe this verbatim, are you right?
No. No, I just there's something in here I wanted to point out. That's
oh,
all.
Oh, good.
It's not testimony, it's...
Yeah, I know.
Oh, sure.
Oh, the green stuff, right. I forgot that. Yeah. Ray, why don't you and your grouping of those that have particularly been involved in this discussion come on up to front row? And that way, if we need to hit you over the head quickly, we can do that.
Well, people move forward.
Since we're all in agreement, let's get together.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
I'm so used to facing these files. I feel nervous when they're behind me and my back is turned toward them.
Gotta be careful. This way, though, you see if they throw a dart, it'll hit you in the back, not in the eye.
I like the other way much better.
Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill, the amendments to House Bill 2656 are really, it's a gut and stuff. The reason we're gutting and stuffing is because I initially intended to use another bill, 2697, as the vehicle. Every time I mentioned that vehicle, I felt like I was starting a war. So we decided that 2697, no matter what form it's in, was not going to be the vehicle, because the mere mention of the number drew a reaction that was not even worth explaining, that we were not, we had a different content to the bill. So we searched around for another vehicle with the right relating clause and used 2656.
And this is the so-called social contract bill?
This is legislation, Mr. Chairman, that reflects the social authority for the social contract. I want to point out that it does not require a social contract, nor does it require the commission to approve a social contract. The reason I passed out the task force report to members was to call your attention to sections which is on 4 and 5 relating to the Universal Service Protection Plan. We pointed out in the task force report that much of the time the task force was spent in relation to the commission's activities on the protection plan, and in part because there were questions of authority that were raised about it, and also in part because whether the authority existed or not, it clearly went far beyond what we had initially anticipated when we passed 2200 last time. If you notice in the findings or recommendations, we made it clear that we don't endorse or oppose the plan. But we do recognize it's beyond the scope of 2200, and the questions of authority were raised. The task force concluded that no PC authorizing a USPP or a similar plan or another similar type of social contract should be implemented without first a legislative review, and then I think for purposes of this, the second one, which is we adopt legislation specifically granting authority to the commission. This bill addresses that finding of the task force, as well as some concerns the commission had on the creating a greater difference between the definition of or the standard for deregulation and the standard for price listing. The social contract may not be a contract. I mean, we keep using that term only because there seems to be some general recognition of what we're talking about. Essentially, what we're really talking about is greater price flexibility, envisioning the possibility that a company or more than one company would come in with a plan that would include greater price flexibility than they would otherwise have under 2200, and in exchange for that price flexibility, there would be automatic adjustments on local exchange rates, and as the protection plan was discussed, there would not be the normal
rate making based upon an allowable rate of return. As we progressed on this, I suggested a couple of things, and we worked on, and that is that the general parameters that the commission would have authority to adopt this plan, a plan such as this, before they adopted the plan, the commission would have to reach certain findings. And as part of the adoption of the plan, part of the agreement, there could be, did not have to be, but could be a sharing of the benefits. In other words, if the allowable rate of return had been a certain amount, we were no longer using that for rate-making purposes. The commission could require, as I believe has happened in a couple of states already, that excess earnings above that would be shared. We tried to meet the company's criteria that they wanted an incentive to be more efficient. Part of the incentive was that they'd be allowed to keep more money than they otherwise would be. But we felt it was important that the benefits to this price flexibility, that there be an opportunity for those to be shared. The other thing, other context I want you all to keep in mind is that we have a situation where we've got groups of people over here that want the commission to agree with them and make a decision one way, and we've got another group over here.
We did our best to try to follow the directions and so on, and it's been amazing to me to see all these people sitting down here in the front rows come up and say they're supporting the bill. And I think job well done.
You mean these prosperous, well-fed people out front? That's what you're referring to?
Mr. Chairman.
Or Mr. Zekas.
As long as we're thanking everybody.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to thank everybody for supporting this bill. I do want to thank Representative Berea and Representative Anderson for their work on the task force as well. And a particular thanks to really imposed upon the PUC Commission staff on this one. A great deal. I'm sure they would have just as soon not had to deal with it, except as long as there was this one little amendment they really wanted and kept them working. But I do appreciate Mr. Barkin, and particularly Mr. Sokolowski's work. We would not have been to this point if he had not have spent a great deal of time translating my convoluted conversations into language that we could work, as well as everybody's participation. I essentially told people that I was going to pursue this authority of the commission, so it was clear they could approve a social contract, not necessarily because I agreed with any kind of social contract at all, and ask people under that assumption, and then I never expected they would necessarily have to support the bill, but ask them to participate in the discussions, and everybody did, and everybody contributed, and I really appreciate their willingness, knowing that they were not going to talk me out of pursuing any legislation. I appreciated their willingness to participate and their contribution.
Well, I appreciate that, too. The committee's done a very nice job, and considering everything we've had before the whole committee, and we still got a number of those big pieces left. I don't know how we quite would have managed without the use of the subcommittee. And I do thank all of you and those of you who are involved. At this point, then, let's go through the bill and so we can move it out.
Mr. Chairman, if I could go through the amendments.
Yes.
I would move on page 3, on line 5, after exist, insert a period, delete the rest of line 5, 6, 7, and 8, and on line 9 change sub C to sub B.
Okay, is there any objection to that amendment?
And, Mr. Chairman, I just want to add again for the record that I do so under the clear understanding that I believe those, that it's my understanding and the understanding of those that participated in this discussion, that the commission, this does not preclude any rule making that the commission goes to enter into in order to do, accomplish a similar goal that the legislative language would.
Thank you very much. There's no objection to that amendment, then I'm going to take the next one.
Next amendment would be on page 6, sub 5, lines 23 through 27. I'd like to substitute the following language. Delete the existing language and substitute.
Delete all of 5.
Delete all of 5. Substitute the following language. Upon its own motion, the commission may fix maximum rate levels.
Can you take it a little bit slower? That's everybody
okay.
Good. On its own motion.
Commission may fix maximum rate levels and terms of service for price listed services and for toll services on non-competitive routes. Period. Then, new sentence. Upon request of an affected person, the commission shall fix maximum rate levels in terms of service for price listed services not subject to competition and for toll services on non-competitive routes.
You'll give that to me, Chair.
I have the language.
Representative Peterson.
I apologize for having to ask. I've been in and out on other bills today. Representative Ekus, can you just tell me briefly what that section does, what the change does?
Yeah. There was a concern that we have as a condition in sub 5 for which price and service competition do not exist. That is, price and service competition is the standard for deregulation. Subject to competition is the standard for price listing. What we are doing in this bill is primarily talking about price flexibility or price listing. So it is more consistent to use rather than for which price and service, for which the conditions for deregulation do not exist, that the for which the conditions for price listing do not exist. That is applies to where it's upon request of an affected person.
Close. I made
mean,
it through three sentences. Let me try it.
Now
we know Rocky and I have been going.
We have standards for deregulation and a different standard. We've now created a standard for deregulation that is different than the standard for price listing under the old 2200.
Okay.
That's what the earlier amendments did. It left it price and service. It used to say for deregulation it was price and service competition or subject to competition. And then in the price listing, we had subject to competition. That put the commission in a difficult position because the same criteria for price listing, you could also, if you found it was subject to competition, then it could also be deregulated. So first thing we've done is we've said for deregulation, the condition is price and service competition actually exists. The other is subject to competition. It's sort of the difference between me putting on my jogging outfit and me actually going out and running.
We've noticed that.
So now we are going over here, and we are taking the knot where you can come in and get a maximum rate. If you're an affected person, you can get a maximum rate for a service if it is essentially not competitive. But since we are in price listing, rather than saying not price and service, which is the deregulated deregulation standard, we are saying not subject to, which is the price listing standard. The other thing we have then done is said we have, however, separated out so that the commission, on its own motion, can set a maximum rate, but not limited that to the subject to competition, or not subject to competition criteria, and left them with some greater discretion.
And that's all in that one section.
Would you like to repeat that?
No. I got enough that I feel okay about.
I got part of it.
Thank you. Other comments? Any objections to that amendment?
Does Representative Vickers feel there's any necessity to run that amendment through LC?
Not really. It's a deletion. Since it's a deletion and substitution, I don't believe it's necessary. And I think our legal experts who've been working on the language of the bill that this was taken from would not see any problem. So, no, I don't see a necessity to do that. If it was changing the order or if it was amending some other statutes or something, yes. But since it's a substitution, I don't think that that's necessary.
My colleague over here says, move it out. All right, anyone else? The next amendment.
That's okay.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment is sort of, how to describe. I remember going to a place called Chuck E. Cheese's once, taking some kids from one of a friend of mine's family, and all the kids went to all of these things with the styrofoam swimming pool, with the styrofoam balls that you jump into, and all the slides and a whole bunch of other stuff. And there was an arcade where all the adults seemed to go. They just dropped their kids off at the other stuff, and the adults would go into the arcade. And there was one game there. I noticed the adults were playing a lot. And you had this little hammer in about 10 holes, and all of a sudden, a little Jack in the Box had come up, and you're supposed to hit, and you try and hit it, and knock it back down again. And then it comes up someplace else. And the adults, for some reason, the adults love this. They're, you know, founding a way. And I guess, to some extent, this represents that part of this process. Someone kind of comes up here for just for a little peek, a little opening, and someone else says, and I guess it comes down to, outside of the catharsis of actually doing this, I don't really see any harm in it, and it does make clear that, I guess it's sort of from the other side, it would make clear that that the commission could deem something essential. It doesn't have to, but it could. I guess you wouldn't be able to go and say, well, this isn't essential because it's not essential to everybody. And that's really all it does. I think it really does get into that slamming the door and the cracking.
Well, Richard Parkinson told me he put tape over all the holes.
No.
When Representative Vickers started describing that process, the first thing I thought was it's like trying to kill snakes, a whole bunch of snakes. Whatever.
I've never had that experience.
Too much Rorschach testing coming out of this remedy.
I hope Representative Vickers doesn't belittle that too much, or NFIB is going to start having suspicions again.
Well, so the language would be what?
I would add on page 7, after line 10, insert the sentence, for purposes of this subsection, essential services need not be essential to all classes of customers.
Okay. I think we understand. Anyone else have any comments on this? Is there any objection to the amendment? If not, Representative Vickers moves LC 2656-1 as amended.
Yes, I do.
If the clerk will call the roll, this is not the final bill. We'll have another motion after that. But, I don't even know if we need a motion on it. We have a proposed amendment of the basic LC with the amendments. Is there any objection to that? If not, Representative Vickers moves that House Bill 2656 as amended. Move the floor with the due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Brea.
Aye.
Representative Ekus.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Hutchinson.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
I was just going to comment that when Representative Ekus carries this, he used lots of the jogging, dressing down for jogging.
Yes, absolutely.
Examples to help everyone through it.
Getting the clown for the mallet.
The bill does pass, and with that, I will close the hearing on this bill and 2656. Again, thank the subcommittee and the members of the industry, and with that, that concludes our business for today.
You ready, Nola?
You're what?
You're ready, Nola.